And having that sort of freedom really changed the way I worked and how I created.
No, yeah, definitely. Mostly as like a designer or creative person, I think we all just want to make things look good and look the best it can. I think we all just really want to make things the best they can be.
Hello and welcome back to The Big Run. On today's episode, we are joined by Dewey Yen. Dewey is the co-founder of Koreatown Run Club and joined us on the podcast a couple of years ago as part of a Run Crew Roundtable special. I thought we were long overdue a catch-up as to what Dewey's been up to with KRC, as well as all his other creative work with the magazine Long Distance and completing the 6 marathon majors, whilst also sampling some of the local cuisine of the cities he was traversing through. In this conversation, we dive deep into that and so much more, and it's a fascinating insight into Dewey as a creative individual, and I'm very grateful to him for coming on the show. Let's get into the interview. Dewey, thank you so much for joining me. Really excited to have you back on the podcast. Now, I know you've been on the show a couple of years ago as part of a Run Crew Roundtable, and I've interviewed you before for another podcast. We are allowed to talk about other running podcasts. There's many out there. It's all good. But there is an episode I did for Soar Running where we chatted as well, and we talked about long distance amongst your other many multiple kind of creative outputs. But I think it might be useful to kick things off with maybe we give kind of the listeners a bit of a Dewey 101. Like, maybe tell us a little bit about yourself, introduce yourself, and maybe talk a little bit about when running entered your life and how it's sort of grown and blossomed over the years you've been connected to the sport.
Yeah, I mean, I'm based out in LA, and like you said, co-founder of Koreatown Run Club. We've been running for over 7 years now. Wow. And honestly, before those 7 years, I wasn't a runner. Ran a mile in high school, and that was about it. But after really starting the Run Club, that was when, you know, everything kind of took off in my mind. You know, I was doing creative work, I was directing, I was shooting, I was doing all that stuff, making commercials and whatever. And it was fun, but it was a job. And then once running happened, it really changed my life. As you know, as crazy as that sounds, but the work that I was doing was changing, and like so many more opportunities came in, and it was so much fun. And we've kind of just grown that to whatever, however big we can. And it's been really fun.
And it has grown. I didn't realize it's 7 years now. It's remarkable. Like, just to think of like a running crew having that longevity. I know there are running crews there are many running crews that have that similar kind of history, but it's interesting your background prior to that of like working commercials, being a creative, and maybe not getting the same level of satisfaction as maybe you found now in terms of like creative expression and running. Do you feel like the running side of it sort of helped unlock that in a way that you found more enjoyable, whereas you didn't have it previously before running was kind of part of your life?
Yeah, I think it was, you know, running's running. I don't necessarily enjoy that part, but being able to, you know, create things, experiences, just like photos, videos, do what I did for work for other companies and brands, but do it for myself was really fun. And then, you know, running was like the byproduct of that, right? Or maybe the other way around. But to me, you know, creating, doing all these things around running was my favorite part of it. And yeah, you know, I probably should run a marathon here if I'm telling everybody else to run a marathon. And so just kind of the marriage of the two really had me enjoying what I was doing. You know, there was no pressure. There wasn't any deadlines. I set everything. And having that sort of freedom really changed the way I worked and how I created.
In terms of creating then, when it comes to like the sort of creative work you do with like KRC or with other stuff that you've done, like what is, or how would you describe your process? Because I think that's really interesting. Like, how does it start for you from like ideation through to delivery? And like, How do you like to work when it comes to maybe an experience or an event like the one you've just done recently, this cease and desist sort of running event? Like, what's the kind of creative journey for you as someone spearheading that?
With everything I do is kind of like, I wouldn't say last minute, but it's very like when inspiration strikes, I got to jump on it and I put everything in and I drop everything else and I just have to get that done. And so we knew we wanted to do for the race, the relay, we knew we wanted to do, you know, an unsanctioned series at the time. It was going to be a 10K at midnight and then this relay, this four person relay, and then a track event and then a half marathon. You know, kind of like a Grand Prix of like races that we put on every year. That was the year right before COVID. And so we did a track event. We did the 10K. We did the relay. The only thing we didn't do was the half. And then COVID came about and, you know, put a pause on everything. So the idea was always kind of there. But I think the process within that is very... It might seem kind of organized when you look at it, like the final product, but it's very much, you know, luckily I pretty much work by myself. You know, I have people helping me, of course, but I'm able to just put everything on myself and not annoy anyone else because it's last minute. And so I do that. And even with the name Cease and Desist, you know, I recently asked like, hey, why do you guys think this is the name? And had answers from like, you know, it's unsanctioned, you know, we're running red lights, you know, cease and desist, whatever. But the real answer is we were like a step away from getting a cease and desist from the Hood to Coast relay in from Mount Hood to the ocean.
Oh, really?
And yeah, and there are Hood to Coast everywhere, but that's the big one. Because we named ours the Hood to Coast, meaning our neighborhood to Santa Monica. And it was like a small relay. Our tagline was the cousin of all relays. Theirs is the mother of all relays. And it was just a fun little thing. But when it grew and it happened and you know, we partnered with Nike, I think they hit up Nike, Hood to Coast hit up Nike and was like, hey, what is this? Like, and that was the year they just re-signed as a partner for the race. And so Nike, like, you know, diffused anything and was like, oh, we'll tell them to take it down or whatever. So we took it down. Next year we just named it Cease and Desist Relay.
I love that bit of inside information there. It's a sort of nod to that thing. And that's a whole other interesting thing is, I suppose, when you're creating experiences that connect to the community, but they build to a certain level where brands start to take notice and it becomes like almost like a commodity or a valuable commodity. Like, how mindful are you of that in terms of preserving the experience for the participants, but when brands are getting involved, almost to like not lose the purity of the enjoyment of the event, but also see it as something that you want to grow. So brands do get involved and kind of front up the cash to make these things happen.
Yeah. I mean, for this one, especially, like, we had a ton of partners. You know, Nike was a big partner. Arrowhead Water is a big partner. Defense was a big partner. Morton was a partner. But I think you don't necessarily feel that when you're running. You know, we had, you know, logos on the bibs to obviously support the brands and on the finish tape, but it wasn't as like in your face as, you know, you go to an expo and it's obviously an organized thing. There's like a sponsor for every little detail. But for this one, it was like, they gave us water, you know, Nike gave us shirts, and it was very much community-based. It wasn't Nike reaching out to us and saying, we would like you to be a part of this. It was us reaching out to our partners and saying, this is what we're doing. We're already doing this regardless if you want to help or not. But there's an opportunity to support one another. And I think that translated well amongst the runners. It didn't feel like it was like a Nike only thing. And, you know, a lot of time you go to these Nike events, it's the same group of people. It's the same, you know, well-designed everything experience. And a lot of times, as fun as it is, it happens fairly often that it's just like, oh, it's just another release. It's just another X, Y, and Z. And so with this one, we made sure we didn't want it to feel that way, and we hope it didn't feel that way. And even with, like, you know, we didn't have a prize at the end. We didn't really tell people, you know, we were charging people for it, but we weren't necessarily to saying like, hey, Nike's going to give you the winner's, you know, stuff after, or they're going to pay for all the food after. We really just wanted you to do it, to support it because you wanted to. And, you know, there are other races out there with like unsanctioned races with, you know, cash prizes, which is great. But the one time we did that, we just saw a lot of people outside of the community. And it's not necessarily a bad thing that people outside of the community are coming in, but their intentions were different. You know, they kind of just wanted to go in there and get the cash prize, which is, it was fine because that's what the race was about. But having no prize and no real reason to do this race other than it's fun to do is kind of what we were going for.
I love that idea of, yeah, the purity of it for the experience. Because I think when, you know, you as a creative, this must be something I imagine that's at the forefront of your mind. And I imagine is the sort of holy grail when we talk about creating experiences, is just that, is making it memorable. So it sears into people's minds as a memory that they want to tell their friends about. Oh my God, I did this crazy unsanctioned race like a week ago. It involved X, Y, and Z, and we were running red lights or whatever the kind of parameters are. Like, Are there sort of unique qualities that you consider when you're kind of creating these things so that they do kind of live in people's memories so they tell their friends about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think just innately, like, an unsanctioned race is pretty memorable just because anything can really happen. Like when you're running like a sanctioned street race, you know it's going to start on time. You know you're headed to a certain point, and unless, like, you know, a bike pacer or whatever takes you off, like you see Kipchoge having to turn around in Tokyo or something, that stuff doesn't really happen. The only other factor that might happen is on you, like, oh, my nutrition, my fueling was off. But you kind of know what you're going to get. And with these races, you have no idea really what can happen. Like, anything can happen. You can get lost. You can show up at the wrong spot. You can, all these things. And, you know, every little bit adds to, you know, the experience of what's going to happen. You know, you talk to people after the race, and everyone has a different outlook, a different POV of the race. They ran a different leg, of course, but then also, like, just who they're running next to or who they're waiting to get tagged with, to hand off the baton, like, all of that adds into the experience. And I think it's such a unique kind of race because it's different every time.
And do you think because it is so unique, it's drawing in a different group of runners who perhaps might not have considered joining an event? Like, if they think about, you know, the marathons or the more traditional events that you were talking about previously, do you think these kind of races bring in a new type of runner?
Yeah, I do. You know, I think a lot of the marathoners and the people in that scene will also do a race like this. But I find that a lot of folks will just get their random friends who may never have done a 5K or a 10K race or anything like that ever. And they're just like, hey, I'm doing this run. I'm doing this race thing. Do you want to do it? It's only 3 miles. It's only 5K. It's only 7K. Like, you can do it, you know? And then they'll be like, yeah, sure, whatever. Thinking it's not like they're just doing this for their friend. And then when they're there and they see the community and they see everything that's going on and experience what they're experiencing, it changes what they view, how they view running and, like, racing, you know.
I love that.
That's super, super exciting.
I love that. I just think with the what wonderful people we can draw into the sport as well, who might not have even considered it. And love that. Yeah, just the sort of random arbitrary, is it 3K, 7K, or whatever, it's fine. Just come to this place at this time and who knows what'll happen. But, like, just talking about the more kind of traditional thing, and you mentioned the word expo earlier. And I think when people think of expos, they think of the marathon majors. And I know you have You've collected them all. You've catched them all. Your 6-star medals. I mean, I'm curious to get your perspective on that experience as someone who crafts their own experiences, has built their own community out in LA with KRC, and someone who is a kind of creative. I mean, what was that experience like for you? Did you enjoy the experience? Were there things that you thought, oh, okay, that's interesting, I'd never really considered that before? What was that journey like for you?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of really just came about. when I got into Tokyo. No, it actually came about when I got into Boston, because, you know, you're running these marathons and you do your first major and you find out about these world majors and how, you know, everybody talks about them. They want to do them all, and it takes a good amount of time. And then you find out when you're running early about Boston and how you can't just get in. You know, you have to qualify. There's no lottery. There's nothing like that. And even when you qualify, there's the qualification lottery, right? But it's harder for like an average or slower runner to be able to do Boston. So in my head, I was like, you know, I'll just keep applying to the lottery for all these other majors, and I'll save Boston for the end. You know, when I'll train and like I'll get older and I have a little extra time to qualify. And I did Chicago with Nike. I got into Berlin through the lottery. I think I had just those two done, and I was waiting on Tokyo. I got in the lottery for Tokyo in 2019, and with COVID, I was due for when I did it, which is 2023 this year. And out of nowhere, I got a message from Morton saying, "Hey, do you want to run Boston?" And so when I accepted that, that's kind of what got into my head, like, hey, maybe I can do not only all six of these really earlier than I thought I would, but I might be able to do all six of these within a year. I have Tokyo lined up, got Boston. I'll need London, New York. I've got Chicago probably with Nike, and I have Berlin also lined up. And so I really just needed the two New Balance ones, as I said. And at the time, I was working with New Balance on a project with Long Distance. And, you know, I floated the idea of, hey, I'm trying to do this. Maybe I can get a bib. And sure enough, they got me the bib. And next thing you know, I was on the line in Boston, knowing that I have all these other marathons lined up and all I had to do was finish them, right? Yeah. And then after that, it was just running the 26.2. No matter whatever time it was just getting that medal at the end.
And what was your experience like of those events? I'm curious from, you know, from the lens you have of like doing events like Cease and Desist, like applying that to your experience of the majors, like are there things, I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, let's do a different distance or can we run it backwards? But like in terms of the actual experience of, you know, going to the expo, getting your bib, running the race, are there things about them that perhaps you'd like to maybe mix up a little bit as a creative? Are there things that, you know, if you were maybe given the reins to like put a Dewey stamp on one of the majors, like would there be things that you'd sort of maybe tweak or shift slightly?
I don't really think about that. I feel like that's all a part of the experience of like running a major. You know, you have your unsanctioned races, but then you also need kind of like your majors, right? Where you know what you're going to get. And like, I want to go to the expo and I want to spend some time there. Even though any other expo, I just get in and get out, get my bib and leave. And I could easily do that with, you know, London or all these other majors. Like they're essentially the same at the expo. But I want to take my time, you know, it's like, it's a major. It's my first time running it. And so I'll do the loop. I'll go through the giant, you know, New Balance thing and the ASICS thing in Tokyo or whatever it is. You know, I might even wait in line for a photo of a giant 26.2 thing. So all of that is just a part of the experience. You know, it would be cool if they made it more like I always wanted a booth at like the LA Marathon, like a Koreatown Run Club booth, selling our merch or whatever it is, and just having, you know, like a concert or something, and make it like a complex con sort of event with like performances and like, you know, they have the whole building that they're doing the expo in, you know, maybe there's like at the end of the day, you know, from 6 to 8 or whatever, you know, someone's gonna perform. I don't know. It could be cool.
I love that already. Your creative head starting to
spin.
Picking
up my bib and going to Ed Sheeran at the end of the trip. I don't know.
I feel like because maybe it would be a load of like nervous runners the day before a marathon. They'd want to be like keeping their time on feet minimum. Maybe it'd have to be like a really relaxing, like like an acoustic, let's get Ed, but let's keep him acoustic. Let's keep it really chilled. And maybe there's some, like, I don't know, some guided meditation or something at the end so people can relax. I feel like if you stage like a Metallica concert or something like that, it might not work. But I love that sort of creative thing. And I mean, in terms of running the races as well, I know if people follow you on social media or maybe some of the stuff you shared across KRC socials as well, you embrace the national dishes or some of the national drinks of the relative majors. I've seen footage of you spinning dough in New York, and I think were you drinking like a cup of tea in London as well in your first time round?
It was Morton, but yeah, I had a cup of Morton in a little teacup and saucer. You know, I don't, most of these I didn't plan, right? I kind of knew they might happen, but I requested the dough, I think, or because people always, so it started in Paris. I ran Paris Marathon and my friend had a baguette and he said, I'm going to give you a baguette at mile 14 or something. And I was like, cool. I missed him at 14, but then I randomly saw him at 22 and he handed me the baguette and I ran with it until the end. And, you know, I posted it and people had a laugh. And then they're like, oh, what are you doing for the next one? You know, what are you doing for Berlin? What are you doing for Chicago? And then in London, we were talking. It was like, oh, it'd be funny if you did, you know, had some biscuits or something. And I said, what would be the most funny if I had a little saucer and a cup of tea and I was just violently shaking and not getting any of the tea or anything? And so sure enough, my friend was like, all right, after Tower Bridge, you know, I'll be on the right side. I might have something for you. And of course, I saw him, you know, I double backed, I grabbed the tea, walked back a little, you know, ran through with the tea, gave him the tea back. And yeah, it's just fun. You know, like I think Chicago, London, Berlin, London and Chicago were a week apart. And with all that travel, you know, I knew it just had to be a fun race. We just had to get through it and just smile all the way through. And it's just fun doing stuff like that. And then people saw it. And if they saw me on the road or on the course, you know, I got handed sushi in Tokyo and people were asking me what I was going to do in Tokyo. And I said, I don't think I'll, you know, it's very like polite society. And I was like, I don't want to like, you know, running with sushi or whatever. I didn't want to be disrespectful for anything. And I don't know what all the other countries, I guess I was good, but my friends in Tokyo, they gave me sushi. So I was like, all right, I'll do it. You know, I had a couple pieces in Nigiri, 5 miles till the finish. Ooh. And when they hand it to you, you gotta take it. You gotta eat it and you gotta hold it all the way through.
So you carried that sushi all the way to the finish line.
Yeah. I wanted the photo at the finish with the sushi and the chopsticks in my hand. I lost a couple pieces, but luckily, you know, it was like a 6-pack. So
your commitment to the bit is is very, very commendable. So a cup of tea for London, for England, of course, and then some sushi and then a baguette for Paris. So what was Chicago and Berlin and Boston?
Chicago, I was handed a hot dog. Berlin, I didn't do anything because I was like, this is like my PR one, you know?
Okay.
And I was like, towards the beginning of the idea. So I was like, it wasn't every major thing. And then New York was the pizza dough because everyone was like, oh, you gotta eat a pizza. And I was, it's like, yeah, it's too easy though. It's gotta be, I don't think it has to top the tea because I feel like the tea I think still is the best because it was simple and just like physically comedic. but the pizza dough, it was a lot of logistics. You know, we had to get the dough. We met outside OMRC. Rio handed me the pizza dough, but he was also like handling his entire run crew in New York. He was handling the cheer zone. So I knew it was a lot to ask. I wasn't expecting it, but it came pre-floured. All I had to do was like do a little couple twirls, and that was mile 21. So I held it all the way to the end as well.
For the photo.
To the end, yeah. It was just a hard piece of, it was like a rock at the end of it. But I just remember, you know, anytime I saw my friends, I would give them a little twirl. I saw like a camera and someone would yell at me. I'd give them a little twirl. But there were tons of people who were taking photos and I didn't know were taking photos. And looking at those pictures,
I was just miserable. You know, the weather was horrible that year. You know, the hills and the bridges, obviously, in the last bit of New York is just slightly all uphill, and I'm just dying. And I'm just holding this pizza dough in my hand, like not playing up to anyone. I just have this dough and I'm just running. And yeah, a lot of confused looks.
Did it become a little bit like, have you seen, was it Castaway with Tom Hanks? Was it like Wilson? Was it a bit like that?
Yeah,
did you
yeah.
have a name by the end?
I mean, I dropped him a couple times, and instead of leaving it, yeah, you know, I bent over at risk of fully cramping my whole body, picked it up, and was like, all right, we're finishing together.
The commitment to the bit is exemplary. And you're doing Berlin this year as well, right?
Yeah.
Has a food sample been selected? Is it a verse, like a brat verse? Like, is that something?
Feel like I have to do something in Berlin because I didn't do it last year. So we'll see. I don't want to spoil anything. Mostly, I don't want to let anyone down saying I am doing something. I end up not doing anything.
He might do. He might not.
Yeah, who knows?
Who knows? The mystery will be revealed in September. I just love that. The logistics of it. You know, most people are worried about. I mean, I was helping a friend out in London, and this was with like nutrition and gels. I just love the fact that it was dough in New York. I mean, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. But just sort of circling back to sort of some of your other kind of creative outputs, because I know running is the actual physical act of running for you. You're kind of like, you can kind of maybe take it or leave it. Because I know another part of what you're very passionate about is soccer or football. And there's a kind of whole other strand to sort of KRC that you've sort of started. I mean, where did that sort of idea come from? And then what was the reaction from other people outside of your circle when you started it? Like perhaps people who didn't know that you were into sort of soccer and football, was it a bit like, I thought you were the running guy. Why are you getting into football? What was their sort of the feedback when you first sort of started that?
If you had known me before running, it'd be the opposite. It's like, oh, you're the soccer guy. What are you doing running? And I wouldn't even consider myself a soccer guy. I was just, you know, I had just started playing when I moved to LA with my friend Colin, who invited me out and, you know, fell in love with it. It was so much fun. I had glasses my whole life until I started playing. And I was like, I'm going to get contacts. And just for that, you know, it's a huge lifestyle change, you know, just to play, you know, once a week. And I remember we'd play with this group, the Domingos. And then I started KRC. You know, KRC was supposed to be a soccer thing, just to play more soccer, and it changed to, you know, to running. And once the running took off, I played less soccer. From once a week, it became like once a month, and then with COVID, it just stopped completely. And the group I was playing with, you know, we just stopped, and you know, we didn't meet up at the fields anymore. We didn't, like the rest of the world, didn't do anything. And running was all that was really allowed, right? Just running by yourself. And then the opportunity came back to kind of pick up the pieces and, you know, gather the troops and be like, hey, we're meeting again Saturday, 4 p.m. Let me know if you're in. And slowly people started coming back, and I incorporated, you know, the run club as well. I kind of changed the name to KRC. From the Domingos to KRCFC, and it's kind of both. Honestly, I still run both, and I have two group chats for each. And for the runners, it was, you know, a lot of people follow KRC that don't necessarily run with us or don't necessarily run at all, whether they're designers or they just like the community part of it, or it's just like whatever reason they have, they just follow KRC and don't necessarily run. But then when I start posting about, you know, football, they're like, oh, I play football. Like, you guys are doing a football thing. I would love to be a part of this. And so they come out, you know, and now I'm friends with these guys that never run. But I play soccer with them every week, and slowly I'll try to, you know, take them to the other side and be like, oh, you should run with us instead. And they'll come out, and it's this whole thing, of, you know, really just either growing football or growing running in America. That is really fun to see and to be able to be a part of and do.
It's super cool. And it's going back to that thing you were talking about earlier as well, about with the cease and desist thing of drawing people into sports that maybe perhaps wouldn't have considered it, and what exciting possibilities can come from that kind of cross-pollination. I'm just going back to something you said earlier about people who followed the KLC account who weren't runners, like designers and stuff like that, because I think that's a really, really important factor when it comes to this idea of building a community that connects. There's the purpose and there's the values behind it and what that sort of value proposition is to people you potentially sort of wanting to draw into the community, but it's also how you present it, like visually as well. And I think KLC is a really fantastic example of that. If you look at your sort of social media output, it's presented in such a sort of compelling, interesting, and I hate to use this word because it just makes me sound old, but cool way. Like, but is that an important part for you for the process? And is that something that you spend a lot of time thinking about in terms of visually how you communicate the, again, I'm going to say another word that makes me sound old, but the vibe, like, yeah. of KLC?
No, yeah, definitely. Mostly as like a designer or creative person, I think we all just want to make things look good and look the best it can. If we're doing it purposefully or not, you know, like it just has to be that way. Yeah, right. It's tricky. It's like it's well thought out, but we're not really thinking, we're not necessarily planning it. It just has to be that way. I don't know if that makes any sense, but yeah, if someone's like, make a flyer for a random thing like a baby shower, which I just made, like I have to make it as professional as it can be. That's how the long distance, the magazine, came to be about. You know, it was initially just supposed to be a little zine, but we had to make it as best as we could, and it you know, developed into something really much larger than just a Xerox copy zine or something.
Where do you think that stems from, that desire for you for like, yes, you could just like knock out a Xerox thing? And I think when a lot of other things sort of manifest online, for some people, that's like, oh, I'll just film it on our phone and bosh it out. Like, that's fine. Don't worry about it. But for others, it's like, it's really important. Like, and you've got to do the best version and it's visually got to present in the right way. Like, can you attribute to that, like where that comes from for you as a creative, why it's got to be like just right?
Yeah, I can't attribute to anything. I think there's just like this innate thing in all of like creative people that they have to be creative, you know, it's just a part of them. And I just remember, you know, as a kid too, just, you know, starting something and getting on a roll and being like, this is really cool. Whether it's, I used to record a lot of music as a kid, just like on my little laptop, and I would go hours and hours, and my mom would yell at me to like eat lunch, eat dinner, and I would just be in my room like recording stuff and being like, this is great. This is like, I'm on a roll. Oh, I can make it a little better here. I could change this little bit here. I can add this thing here. And I would just keep doing it and doing it. And I think even non-creative people, I feel like we all have that, but it might be buried with some other things, you know. But I feel like if you strip away, if you go back, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years, however old you are, whatever, you know, if when you start, it's like you want to do things good, and maybe you weren't creatively supported or something as when you were younger or something like that, or things just got harder or something. But I think we all just really want to make things the best they can be. With running, you know, like I'm sitting here talking about like, oh, I want to make things as best as they can be creatively. But if you map that over to running, like I'm not here saying I want to be the best runner. I want to PR every time. You know, like I don't necessarily care about that, but I think that's because things have happened to me where I don't feel like I need to do that anymore. And that's kind of the same as like being creative and doing the best like you can. Like, I feel like some people just, they don't necessarily need to, you know? So, and I'm sure there are runners out there listening to this and saying, how can you not say you're a runner, but how can you be a runner and be a creative person and say, you know, I'm a creative person. I got to make things the best creatively as they can be and push it to the limit. But then when you're on the running side, you're like, eh, I'll just finish it. I'll just walk. I'll just start walking. I could have done, you know, 10 minutes better, but whatever, you know, it's similar to that.
That's a brilliant point, and you make it very, very, very poignantly there. And it's exactly right. It's like what I was trying to sort of communicate there, and you did it in a much more succinct way than I was trying to sort of articulate it, that thing of like, just knock it out on Word and just print it up and bash it out and just, you know, photocopy it 30 times and hand it round. Like, well, yeah, you can flip that onto running as well, but you can still, you know, find sort of joy within that. But I am curious, is there a version of Dewey that exists that is like a PB chasing kind of tempo running threshold track obsessed, you know, is there a version in the future? Like, could you see that sort of side of yourself manifesting, or are you kind of happy with, yeah, I'm going to enjoy it?
I think about it and I try to envision it. You know, I always say, if it's my last marathon, you know, if Tokyo is my last one this year, if I get in, then I will train and I will do my best to PB, but I haven't been able to take those steps. So I can envision it, you know, but, you know, just doing it is another story. So potentially in the future, yeah.
Okay. All right. Potentially. All right. I'm just envisioning a sort of a Rocky montage of you sort of getting into shape, yeah, for Tokyo.
But the marathon training is just so long that, like, you can get lost in the middle of it so easy. If it's, I'm pretty competitive on, like, short, you know, more like a 200 meter race, just like, hey, I'll race you to that line, you know, like, I'm super competitive that way. But just training and just having done it for so long and knowing the work you have to put into it while trying to do all these other things and juggle training and life and work and everything, it's just very like, I can give the minimum, a little more than minimum with running. Like, I'm already running all these marathons, like, you know, like week after week after week. I can't PR all of them. So
it is, yeah, you're right. It is a commitment, and marathon training, because it's not something you want to walk in sort of wildly underprepared, because marathon training is, yeah, it's such a long-term investment. Now, I'd love to touch just briefly, there's so many sort of facets to you, Dewey, and that we could do a podcast almost on each one of your kind of creative outputs, but you mentioned it earlier. I'm curious to know where the kind of next version is of long distance. So you've released two of these now, right? Is there another installment coming? Is there plans for future publications of long distance that you're working on?
Yeah, so we've made two issues. First one was during COVID, about runners during COVID. Second one was with Nike, kind of just a retrospective on the Gyakusu collection with Undercover. And the third one we really wanted to do, kind of combine the two and make kind of like a look back on run crews and just the history of run crews from New York to London, to Amsterdam, to Berlin, and how it just spread all over the world, and where it is today and where it will be in the future. And so that, I want to say that's in the works, but tons of other opportunities and stuff and things came up. And so we're working on some product right now, outside of just printing on t-shirts, and we're doing some creative work, kind of acting more of as an agency. And so we've really spread, you know, laterally, and have to really figure out organizationally what we really want to do and our goals, and then hopefully that issue comes out and no one steals the idea and we do it.
Well, you've got it on record on this podcast now. We can attribute it directly to Dewey. There's an audio record of it. It's interesting you talk about the history of run crews, and, you know, we were talking about KRC earlier being 7 years old. I mean, do you think about the future of KRC? Do you think about where it can go? You know, you were saying earlier you're more of a sort of, not a last minute person, but you like to sort of focus intently on something and kind of just push it through the delivery. But do you think bigger picture? Do you think sort of 5 years down the line?
Yeah, I mean, I think about it a lot. I feel like, you know, when you get older, you think about the end, right? And with run clubs, as crazy as it sounds, but, you know, as someone who's created one and have been in one, you kind of see what other run clubs are doing and like the big ones back in the day, where they are now, and the ones popping up and where they are, you know, and kind of where you fit in with everything. And there's an evolution, and there's a lifespan of these things, right? And I think the goal is to live as long as possible, you know, in those golden years of your run club, because if the foundation isn't there and you're not in it, then it'll wither away.
And the community will see that, and they'll replace you with whatever need, whatever other, you know, they'll start their own run clubs or anything to kind of make up for what you're unable to give. And that's totally fine. You know, I think that's totally normal and great to see. But if you're trying to see, look at your kind of like, if like you're looking out for your club and how, what it looks like, I think about, am I still going to be interested in this in like 3-5 years? And if I'm not, do I hand it off to somebody who is, or does it just end? Mm. Or do I just leave it out there to wither away and I just retire somewhere, you know, with, you know, my six medals or whatever, because it's a big responsibility. Mm. To kind of be a part of this community and have formed this. And I think I'm starting to envision where it'll be. But I know we're not there yet. You know, we still have, and luckily having to do so many other things, you know, I don't put all my eggs in one basket, in KRC, and like having with these unsanctioned races, I have so many more ideas and so many events and experiences for years to come. And then a whole nother aspect of it, like an editorial kind of merging long distance, the magazine with KRC, and really seeing the lives of runners in LA that, yeah, it'll be here for a while. You know, we're not running out of ideas. And I think it's just figuring out how to maintain the everyday while being able to do, you know, more elevated, like out there things while still having, you know, 4 runs a week and aid stations and training people for marathons and everything like that. And we have a great group of volunteers and runners that'll help take on that responsibility.
Because, I mean, you kind of sort of hinted at it there, but what is the kind of makeup internally of the run crew in terms of like staff? I know you and Mike kind of co-founded it, but is it just you two, or is there, like you say, is there a group of like volunteers that kind of help prop up that kind of general running of the crew?
Yeah. I mean, we have our captains that rotate out every year for each run, you know, for track, for Monday nights, Thursday nights, Saturday morning long runs. We have 2 or 3 captains for each night that lead the runs. And then when their watch is over, we'll have two or three other ones. And that is pretty sustainable. And then I think it was David Brooks said, like, the best community is the one that self-organizes, right? And so just through, you know, the kindness of the people that run with us, they make like they'll volunteer their time and do aid stations. So every Saturday there's like 6 to 10 runners that will not run or are not training that will come out early in the morning and have little aid stations set up for us for our long runs. And that same group of volunteers will volunteer for the races that we do, and really anything, like, you know, it's not the same group of volunteers. It's just anyone who can do it at that time. But yeah, it's a good community and everyone wants to help and, you know, it's totally free. So they want to give back with their time and what they can do and what they can offer.
Amazing to hear, and just I think gives people a little bit of insight into just to the actual running of what it takes to sort of build and sustain something that brings people so much value. And I imagine there might be people listening to this who may be thinking, oh, something and maybe I'd want to think about kind of doing, like, you know, they're maybe wanting to start something of their own or maybe wanting to build something creatively. I mean, is there anything that you wish you'd known back when you and Mike were starting it that you know now that you'd maybe want to sort of proffer as advice to people who are thinking of maybe journeying down the path that you've been on?
It's the fact that people want to help, you know. When we started, we felt like we had to do everything. You know, we had to be at every run, we had to run at every run, we had to run at every marathon that we would tell people to do. We had to do all these things, and if we continued to do all of them, you know, it's not sustainable. We would be out of it, and, you know, KRC would have lasted 2-3 years. But also, I don't think you can just come right out and be like, hey, you guys got to come out 6 a.m. and set up these tables and give us water, right? You can't force anybody to do any of that.
And you have to build the community first and then ask and see if people are down to host a run. Like someone, we only had runs Saturday mornings that Mike and I would host. And then one of the runners said, what if we did a Monday night? Or what if we did a Thursday night? And we said, sounds great. Do you want to host it? And they were like, oh yeah, why not? You know? And then they would do it. And then, you know, we started doing track and we had people doing track. Cause Mike and I, we should not be coaching anyone on a track, you know, definitely not at that time. And so we had people who knew what they were doing, coaching us on the track. And then, it just grew from there.
Yeah. And just let it build gently and slowly, and lean into your community as your tools to help it kind of grow. Like you were saying, that quote, like it will sort of sustain itself, and long may it continue. And like, you don't strike me as someone who's going to sort of run out of ideas anytime soon. So I'm excited to sort of see where KRC and your kind of creative output continues to go. And that feels like a good point to end this conversation on. I look forward to maybe seeing whatever that culinary treat is that you eat in Berlin, or maybe you won't, who knows. But I look forward to that. But I just want to say, yeah, thank you, Du, for coming back on the podcast and being a great guest on The Big Run.
Thanks for having me.
A big thank you to Dewey for coming on the show. You can find all of the relevant links to Career Town, Run Club, Long Distance, Love Hour, and all of Dewey's creative exploits by following the links in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you are enjoying The Big Run wherever you are consuming it. Please do leave us a review and rate the show. It really helps with the show's visibility. And I'll see you next time for The Big Run.